This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Glynis Board. Police in the Eastern Panhandle are getting some new training.
Let's face it, we know what's going on in the country. It's a hot topic. You know, as the chief, I felt now was a really good time to look at our de-escalations, look at our racial profiling.
Today, we're talking all about race and diversity. This is West Virginia Morning. As the nation continues to grapple with conversations over police brutality and racism, some police departments are trying to tackle the problem by teaching better communication skills and recognizing bias among their officers. Police in Jefferson County last week completed a two-day training focused on de-escalation, implicit bias, and racial profiling. Liz McCormick has more.
Do words matter? What we say, does that matter? Yes? Tone matters?
About two dozen police officers are gathered inside a spacious room upstairs in the Charles Washington Hall in downtown Charlestown. They all work in Jefferson County. Most of them are city police in Charlestown, with some from Ranson and the Jefferson County Sheriff's Office. Most of the cops at the training are white men, but three are women, one of whom is black. These officers are here to learn skills in de-escalation, which essentially means to approach confrontations with respect, empathy, and calm communication. Corporal Jason Newlin, who's white, has 18 years of policing experience, most of which are for the Charlestown Police Department. He says the last time he had training in de-escalation was in 2002.
I think training like this will show the general public that we are making an attempt to retrain our thought process and retraining the way that certain situations can be handled in the way that we speak to people. You know, every human being, whether they're on the right side of the law or not, have an expectation to be treated with dignity and respect.
Annual de-escalation training isn't mandatory in Charlestown, but some West Virginia cities, such as Morgantown, do make it mandatory. Newlin says he thinks trainings in de-escalation and racial profiling need to happen more often.
Technology advances. Why shouldn't our training? You know, we have to shoot our guns twice a year to maintain state qualifications for weapons that some have never, ever had to use in the field.
But they don't receive regular training in communication skills, which Newlin points out is one of the things they use most. All police officers in West Virginia are required to have 16 hours of state-approved, in-service, or continued education training annually, according to Charlestown Police Chief Chris Kutcher. It's department heads like him who decide what these annual trainings will include.
Let's face it, we know what's going on in the country. It's a hot topic. You know, as the chief, I felt now was a really good time to look at our de-escalations, look at our racial profiling. My focus with this is to give the officers some tools, things to think about when they're out interacting with our public here in Charlestown.
Kutcher says this was the first training held by his department that took such an in-depth look at de-escalation, racial profiling, and bias. The training was led by Silver State Consulting, a law enforcement and police training group based in Las Vegas, Nevada. They focused the first day on de-escalation techniques for addressing verbal confrontations. It emphasized the importance of speaking calmly, asking questions like, "How can I help?" and being respectful at all times. The second day of training, police officers learned about implicit bias and racial profiling. The instructor emphasized that everyone has bias and discussed ways to recognize when this is a problem and how to check yourself.
When you're being trained to be a law enforcement officer, you're trained on how to do the job, but you're not trained on how to interact with people.
Robert Woolsey is the owner of the Silver State Consulting Group and led the two-day training in Charlestown. He's also a former police officer and police chief. He says police are the public face of government, so it's hugely important for them to have good people skills and remain positive while interacting with the community.
Most people see a police officer every single day, but they never see their mayor or their governor or the president of the United States. And so as a very visible presence in the community, it's something that needs to be taught. We just never thought to do it. We never really put the emphasis on how to communicate and how to interact with folks.
Woolsey says criminal justice reform as a whole is necessary to address the problems of racism and the high incarceration rate of people of color. He says recognizing mental health issues among police officers, suspending cops when necessary, and training in de-escalation and racial profiling are keys to a better policing system. At least one other West Virginia police department, Morgantown, held a similar training earlier this year. According to a department spokesperson, Morgantown holds de-escalation and anti-bias training annually. West Virginia Public Broadcasting also reached out to the Charleston, Wheeling, and Huntington police departments for comment on their own de-escalation training, but they did not respond before this broadcast. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Charlestown.
A longtime community leader in the Northern Panhandle, Ron Scott Jr., was born and raised in a family of community advocates in Wheeling. He founded and directs the Ohio Valley African American Student Association, an organization that encourages and promotes higher and continued education for Black and biracial students in the Ohio Valley. Now, he's the Director of Cultural Diversity and Community Outreach at the YWCA in Wheeling. I met up with him the other day to learn about some of the changes he's seen in his community in the wake of the George Floyd killing. YWCA, talk to me a little bit about that history. I understand that this organization has been dedicated has a history of dedication to diversity. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, it's I've never seen an agency that has eliminating racism in their mission statement. Like, that's it. And it's before empowering women. It's eliminating racism, empowering women. And they did something with they called it the Blue Triangle. Like, right during segregation, there weren't services for Black women and children and families. They didn't, because it was segregated, it didn't have it. Jim Crow stuff, it just didn't exist. So they went out of their way to make a separate agency called the Blue Triangle that was affiliated with the Y, and it just served Black women and children and families. And it was around for a while, through all the segregation stuff, through all the Jim Crow stuff. And I'm amazed that I never, one, learned anything about that. Or it's never been kind of celebrated, the bravery of an agency like that back then. Because you weren't getting rewarded for that sort of stuff then. You weren't considered a visionary for doing that. You were just breaking the rules. And now they were on the right side of history. So it's kind of cool to be affiliated with an agency that has historically been on the right side of history.
Yeah. So you've been with them for 4 years. And then recently we've seen this wave, obviously, with George Floyd, with the Black Lives Matter. Have you seen an uptick in interest? Have more people been coming to you through the Y or elsewise for guidance?
Definitely. And me and a good friend of mine, Jermaine Lucius, we've been trying to figure out why this is so different. Because the act itself, this isn't new. Like, this is, well, especially not to us. This isn't a new thing. This isn't a new phenomenon. But I think it may have been the combination of the quarantines from the virus, people just being at home, just watching TV, and it dominating the news stories, and nothing else can take your eyes off it. There's no football games and basketball games. There's nothing to distract you. So they kind of got to see it and really let it soak in this time. And the outpouring and outcry has been incredible to me. I've never experienced this kind of outrage from the white community for an issue that, in essence, doesn't affect them. But I've been just inundated with, what can I do? How can I make my agency better, or my community better? I didn't know. Like, I thought originally it was gonna be like, maybe I'll get a week out of this. So I'm like jumping on whenever I can. Whoever's asked me anything, I'm on it. And a week passes, and then 2 weeks pass, and then a month passes, and people are still asking me, what can I do? And they're not doing things like they just want to put like a little Band-Aid on stuff. They're like, what can we do that is sustaining? Like, how can we change the culture of this agency or this hair salon? I've been speaking to groups that I just didn't even know had those kind of concerns. And it lets me know a lot of stuff. Like, but there was a local hair salon who had an issue in the salon. It was race related because people were speaking out. It made it tense and uncomfortable in the salon. And the owner asked me to come and speak to all the staff. And we just had a great conversation about, one, their views, because I don't ever go into the situation with, you're wrong, let me tell you why. And so we just kind of flesh out whatever it is they already think, what they already feel, and who they want to be and how they want to be perceived by other people. So once we fleshed all that out, we then realized places like salons are social hubs. Like, people come there and get more candid than they do in doctor's offices. And therapist's office. So being able to have that, do that kind of a presentation and talk at a place like that, it has like a ripple effect. And that's how real change happens. You know, it's not me standing in front of the city building, you know, with a megaphone. It's having presentations at like hair salons or community centers, places like that. That's, and all these places are asking. They're saying, what can we do?
Well, is there a theme as far as the conversations have gone? You know, some sort of action points that you come up with again and again to advise people, or is it all very individual to their organizations and whatnot?
Well, there's an underlying theme that it seems like a lot of people that reach out to me seem to be working with, where it, the issue of them being perceived a racist sometimes seems to be worse than being one. So what they want to make sure happens is, I don't want to do or say anything that might make folks believe that I'm a racist, or I just have no real sensitivity or tolerance to anyone different than me. So it's almost like they want me to come in and we talk, do some like an assessment of the idea of, you know, I've been in the city for a long time and I've had a few black employees, I had my roommate in college. So we go through all of that sort of stuff, and it's like they're unsure because they're seeing how the systematic racism has permeated almost every institution that they've loved. And now it's like it's, and I don't know why now, they just seem to see it clearly. And some of them, it scares them. Some of them, they're in denial about it. And others just want to go to action. They're like, we gotta fix this. Like, I didn't realize this is how you felt every day. And they're ready to go. So I'm like, hello, let's go then. Yeah, I'm not slowing down.
Right.
Not until they are.
I hesitate to use the term hope right now because I think so easy to jump to. It's like, oh, yeah, now we have hope, you know? It's like, but I'm curious to know how you feel about the future. Do you think that with this more substantial sort of movement afoot, that there will actually be tangible policy change and shifts, you know, that are measurable, even,
right,
you know?
See, I'm right now, I think I'm hopeful for attitude shifts, paradigm shifts in thinking, and I think personalities, like those kind of shifts are definitely happening, and I think we're going to be able to see more of it. But I have begun lately to lose some of the hope because there are certain narratives that are like comfortable shoes to people, you know? And the newest one is the idea that Black Lives Matter is like a terrorist organization that has an agenda to just kill random and innocent white people. That narrative, people have adopted it, and that's finally giving me a little bit of pause where I can see this starting to lose some traction because people are believing stuff that they haven't seen. Real change is uncomfortable, and for a minute there, people were just ready to get uncomfortable. They were ready to hear this conversation, but with this idea that there's a terrorist group called Black Lives Matter that's just killing people randomly and innocent people for no reasons, it's a ridiculous notion, but people are clinging to it, and I think that might slow us down. Because I've been explaining to people that Black Lives Matter isn't even an organization in a sense. It's a movement, it's a sentiment, it's an idea. I mean, yeah, they got a website, they got principles, there's a founder, but so does Me Too. But there's not a Me Too office or a board of directors for the Me Too movement that could organize No, it's the idea of it. It's one that resonates when you get it, when you understand that what you're saying is Black Lives Matter as well, too. Just like my life matters, Black Lives Matter as well. Once you wrap your mind around it, it's such a simple sentiment and it's so easy to get behind. But when you throw some, you know, a little dose of fear in there, people are ready to put the comfortable shoe back on. Like, okay, yeah, they're killing people. We're good. We're going to stay in the house.
That was Ron Scott Jr., Director of Cultural Diversity and Community Outreach at the YWCA in Wheeling. He's currently coordinating a multi-year plan to address racial issues across public and private high schools throughout Ohio County. And since the killing of George Floyd began with an altercation over a counterfeit $20 bill, the YWCA has launched what they're calling Change for a 20 Challenge to raise funds to further work toward promoting equity in the community. You can learn more about the challenge on our website and read a transcript of this interview at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Andrea Billups is our news director. I'm your host and producer, Glynis Ford. This is West Virginia Morning.